Good evening, you guys. K2 Romeo India Whiskey. Micro letters. My name is Dick. You'll also hear KC2WGB, John. John and Dick together try to run this thing called the TechNet, try to organize this enthusiastic crew that meets most Sunday evenings at this time to discuss their favorite subject, the 26 different kinds of ham radio. A person signs into the technical net by giving John and Dick your call letters, your name, try to remember to give your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for that. You need not check in if you only are listening. After 29 and a half years of the TechNet, this is TechNet number 1,407 of the series that began in September of 1982. After 29 and a half years, we believe somebody in the tri-state area is listening. From time to time, you're going to be hearing some disruptive sounds, like the one you're hearing in the background right now. We have various ways of working around that, so just hang in there. We'll be using those techniques to work around that sound. It slows us down a little bit, but to put it in context, not the end of the world. A person signing in, I'm going to give you an example of what it would sound like. KC2RFN at Allen. So if Allen was checking in with a question or a comment, that's the way he would check in. Give me your call letters and name right now. And try to remember to listen for the beep, if at all possible, with these sounds in the background. K2LAW, go right ahead.
KC2WGV, good evening, Dick. A couple of questions from Mel's mailbag, so we'll be carrying that on at time. Back to you.
Very fine, John. We'll also be most likely hearing from Paul, WS2N, who will be telling us what NASA has been doing over the last week. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name at this time. K2LAW listening.
N2XJN, after Paul. And if it's not busy, but if it's all as well. Satoshi.
What's the name?
In regards.
Okay, we got Paul, we got Wes. I think I was hearing Jim in there. KD2BHY. Is that true, Jim? Give me a repeat and I'll listen to you on the input.
Yep, I'm checking.
Thought I recognized that voice. Okay, so we got Jim as a real. Anyone else to check into the TechNet tonight? Give me a call out as a name right now. Okay, looks like Jim is number one. KD2, Baker Hotel Yankee. Go right ahead, Jim.
K2LAW. All right, Dick. I had a couple questions. The first one was me and my son Matt like to go out and go out into the field and go metal detecting. And it's a lot of fun going and finding some pretty old. But I was just wondering if anyone
mixing up your name. The KC2, give me that again.
Thank you. close to you.
Roger, Dodger. I believe the question...
Check that.
Either that or 449-125.
minute, can you hear my call on the input?
Thank you.
He is meeting the input of his microphone. I think he's very local to that repeater.
What?
I'm hearing you on the input right now. He said, you want me to go to Simplex? Repeat your message.
Yeah, the old truck. know, the good guys trying to catch the bad guys. It's like it's a never-ending thing for 40 years. You think it would have worn out by now, you know? Not bad and become one. Everybody will help you as usual. Kind of a struggle. If I can't do it, nobody would. Yeah, I guess so. Driving around, we used to do years ago triangulation. One, three guys. Kind of like I said earlier, the old way of the past. Let somebody else do it. You know, like I said before, what goes around comes around.
We're on a real live bunny hunt, KD2BH1.
How long ago was that bunny hunt you were on, Jim?
Oh, it's gotta be 8 years. Yeah, I'm 68 now. Thank you. vehicle, guys.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Is that the best you can do?
K2RIW testing.
Curious about how, if you had any knowledge about how the metal detector works. It was kind of puzzling.
Yeah, there's all kinds of metal detectors. I own one that was an inexpensive one being sold on sale at Radio Shack. An awful lot of them have a loop of wire with multiple turns at the end of that wand. It looks like a pancake at right angles to the end of the wand. And that loop of wire is part of a resonating circuit. I'm not quite sure if it resonates at one megacycle or whatever. But it's a free-running oscillator. There's a separate... you could build one with one megacycle, for instance. So a one megacycle oscillator is using the coil that's in that pancake at the end of the wand. A second one megacycle oscillator is inside of the thing that you're carrying. And the two oscillators are beat against each other, very similar to a beat frequency oscillator of a receiver. When a piece of metal is anywhere near the vicinity of the magnetic field coming out of the pancake coil, the piece of metal is a object that will change the inductance of that coil. If it's a magnetic piece of metal, usually a piece of magnetic material in the middle of a coil, increases the inductance. If it was a conducting non-ferrous material like aluminum or copper, you put aluminum or copper object near a coil and it decreases the inductance. In either case, whether it be magnetic and increase or non-magnetic and decrease, there's a change in the frequency of the oscillation of the coil. Since that oscillator is being beat against the one megacycle oscillator in my example that's in the handset, you now hear a tone. So whenever one or the other kind of metal comes nearby, you'll hear a tone. And the tone will increase in pitch as the frequency difference between the two increases. And therefore, you can tell when you're getting closer and further away because you hear a greater or less...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
So that pitch that you hear is the difference in frequency between the free-running oscillator that's in the pancake coil and your fixed oscillator that's in the handset. That's one method of operation. There are other methods of operation where there's more changes volume of the tone that you hear. So there's various ways you can do it, but the main thing that happens with a metallic object in that coil, the coil is usually all something like a 6 or 8 inch diameter. Therefore, it's got a fairly strong magnetic field that goes out quite a number of inches from that coil. And I was wishing my magnetic detector was in good operation. I've lost one of my socket wrenches outside recently. I've lost a key outside. And I've lost one of the kitchen knives outside. And with a good working metal detector, I'd probably be able to find them pretty fast. So it looks like you were doing beach combing, and you probably found bottle caps and coins. Is that true, Jim? KD2VHY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Actually, no, we went out to...
Cowboy Dick with some nuts.
The old
Indians love Cowboy Dick.
Oh, hey, I'm going to fill your posse with my Cowboy Dick.
Oh, Cowboy Dick.
Here, try it. The hell is it?
I can't talk. My mouth is full of Cowboy Dick.
He's a freak. He is.
I'm going to fill your mouth with my Cowboy Dick. I'm going to put your freezer.
Acorn W82AXO.
Paul, how strong did you say he was in Massapequa?
S9. Very strong.
Okay. So he's pretty close to Massapequa. S3 at Huntington. You started saying that you didn't see bottle caps or coins. Tell me what you did see in the metal detector. What kind of a metal detector was it, Jim? So you didn't pick up metal caps, bottle caps, or coins, but you picked up something else. So what did you pick up, and whose metal detector was it, Jim? KD2BHY, K2RIW.
Almost not there, and he's definitely vertically polarized.
Glad to hear that. S3 here in Huntington, and getting a little bit stronger. And the guys in Massapequa are hearing I'm very strong also, and so in Levittown.
Do you hear me in Glen Cove?
I'm hearing you in Glen Cove.
Yeah, he was like almost pinning the meter at about 210 degrees near Glen Cove, very close to it, so he's in the car.
Roger, Dodger.
Hey, Jim, tell us what you found on the beach.
You got it, Jim.
Still love the hip hop. They say we cry together, lie together. I swear to God, I hope we die together.
Still S3 in Huntington.
This WA2AXO.
Yeah, he goes up and down in power output, Paul. He's running in the low power mode now, and I can easily overload him with very little power out of my end. And then there are times when I can't when I go to high power. So he's moving around in location. There's more than one of them because I'm hearing two separate jamming signals. One of them is the cowboy something or other, and the other one is the squeals, the feedback. WA2AXO. How are they treating you, Paul, these days? And how's the meetings on Wednesdays? First Wednesday of the month. AXO? RIW, you got it, Paul.
AXO, win tickets or buy them now at Ticketmaster.
Hey, how about group?
Yeah, okay, this is WA2XO. The meetings are going fine. We didn't have one 4th of July. Yes, I thought they were two. Because there were two different strengths and two different types of signals.
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul. I'm hearing two different kinds of signal, two different kinds of source material. Seriously.
Thank you.
Thomas on board of us. Just hold time, stay to the break. Take your clear. Change pose 1-4. The German rider 2, Robert 2, Stars in 4. Stay to with your friends. Sean, rubber test about the days growing up in the first prison ship. And as I sit back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark off the childhood. All the kids playing out front. Little boys messing around, but the girls play double dutch.
Hey, this one is coming in quite strong in Rockaway.
Yeah, S4 in Huntington that time. Okay, QRIW testing.
I can't hear him anymore. I just had him S9 on that other song.
Thank you, Jim. What were you finding on the beach, Jim?
Well, it was a lot of fun. Actually, we didn't go to the park.
Where are you, Deek? Leslie wants to talk to you.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Okay, now we don't need anymore. I just want to comment, we're having a really good aurora tonight. Had one last night as well. And if anybody is interested, this is the perfect time to look for band opening on the aurora, especially on 16.
WS2N testing.
KQRIW testing, hello 12. Okay. I was hearing Barry discussing aurora that we're having. I think there was a good solar prominence that took place. I don't think the 2.5 input is working right now. The 3.75 input is working. Paul, you have the ability to transmit on 3.75. So why don't you repeat your information for Jim about the four or three different kinds of multiple detectors. WS2N, KQRIW.
Okay, very good, Jim. Yeah, I researched this about a year ago, and they had four different types that I came across. The very low frequency type, VLF, also known as the induction type, had a transmit and receive coils. They were only 1,000 beats per second. That's what they were doing. They had a transmit and receive coil. Then there's another one called a VLF phase shift. It uses inductance and resistance. And with that, you wind up, they have a discrimination. They compare the timing from the known metal objects. And you could tell just by the difference in the timing that's coming back. You know, if it's set at one time and all of a sudden the timing changes, that means there's a piece of metal there. So that's how that one will work. Let me drop this one sec. Okay. Then there's something called PI or pulse induction, and it just uses the one coil. And what it does is, it'll send out a pulse and just similar to the other one, to the discrimination one. And then there's a fourth one, more expensive, you probably you know, one of these couple $100 ones, I think. That's got the BFO, beep frequency oscillator. Jim, I know it's familiar with that. And how that works is you have two coils, one in the head, and then one in the control box that you're fooling with. So you got two different coils going on, and there are two different frequencies. So now the object, you know, the metal comes along and changes this orbital frequency. You know, you take the two frequencies, and you wind up with something in between, and that would be the BFO, beat frequency oscillator. So, you know, basically you're hearing the difference in frequency between the two coils. That's probably it. Four different types there. I went through this last year looking for these things for my grandson. Back to you, Dick. WS2M.
That's all for good information, Paul. The main thing I'd like to know, Paul, and I'm sure it's the same thing Jim would like to know, which one do you believe has the greatest range to find the smallest piece of metal? Which one has the greatest sensitivity? My guess is there's more than one answer depending on whether the piece of metal is large or small, ferrous or non-ferrous metal. But from your research, which of those four types do you think has the greatest range, Paul? WS2N, K2LIW?
Well, the ones with the bigger coils, you know, naturally had more power behind it, so you could take the, you know, any one of them would be competitive against each other. I thought the big difference was they have the discriminator setting. You'd go one way or the other, depending on whether it was metal or copper, you know, with the medium price and the more expensive prices. I like the cheapest ones. All I wanted to do was find metal, money. I didn't care, you know. It would register almost any kind of metal. And that was probably the better one. Regular, very low frequency with the induction coils in it. I thought that was best. Especially if you're young, there's no way you're going to fool with this discriminator left, right, and looking at the meter and all. Give me something where you wave it over some kind of metal and it makes the noise. That's good. I don't care if it's, you know, ferrous or non-ferrous. You know, if you do, then you got to go for the bigger money, and you have to be a little older to operate. It does get confusing.
Paul, what is your best guess as to the real range of one of these things? If I'm looking for something the size of a dime or a 50-cent piece, can you pass the wand over it and easily detect it at, say, 1 foot, maybe even 3 feet? What's your best guess as to the best range for what size piece of metal any of these metal detectors that you know about have had? WS2N, K2LAW.
One I have, from Radio Shack, probably 30 years old, the Maverick, I think they called it. And as long as it's within that circle, I would say if you're about 3 inches above the ground and that thing is on the ground in the grass, you can get a nickel, no problem, or even slightly below the dirt. Now, if it's a bigger piece of metal, you know, a can or something, that could be, you know, maybe a couple inches, and maybe 3, 4 inches, 5 inches below the ground, no problem. I used it recently for a ground rod. I was looking for my ground rod in the backyard, in fact, this spring, and that thing was about 3 inches below ground, you know, by the time I found it. But this thing went off, no problem. I mean, and this is, you know, maybe a, probably equivalent to maybe a $40 unit today, $30 unit. No problem. I mean, found that a long time ago when we dropped it. My backyard used to be woods, you know, so far, far away in the woods. I was going along with this thing, and, you know, I'd find a piece of metal from, you know, there were old can openers and cans in the backyard, you know, that I'd find, you know, time from time to time. One time the thing went off. I dug that about 18 inches, and I found an old wheel from a Volkswagen. You know, just a wheel, not the tire, just a wheel. So that had to be 18 inches at least down before, maybe, I mean, no problem finding this thing. So I think they're very good.
Sounds awful good, Paul. In the case of a ground rod, which is a very large piece of metal, even though it's long, the total size of that metal is massive. I think an EIA standard ground rod is 8 feet long and 5/8 of an inch diameter, and usually made out of steel, covered with copper or galvanizing. But I'm a little disappointed where you said something the size of a dime or a nickel or 3 inches below the soil when you're right on the soil maybe is the limit. In other words, if a dime or a nickel was buried 5 inches below the sand at the beach, I think you're saying you might not detect it with the one that you were using. Is that true, Paul? WS2N, K2LAW.
I would say that's sure. I never tried one of the expensive ones, but you'd have to ask. I don't know. It'd be an expensive one. That's about all you're going to get. If you're at the beach and that nickel's maybe 2 inches below the ground, you've got to have it within that ring. It's not going to go. It's not going to pick it up on the outside of that ring. No way.
Okay, let me try this one on you. If I went and bought the expensive one that looks for phase difference or timing difference or whatever, has anyone claimed what range it'll find something below the ground? I mean, has anyone ever claimed to have a range where it can find a nickel, let's say 6 inches below the ground, Paul? Has anybody claimed anything like that? WS2N, K2LAW.
I think I remember, I went through a lot of reviews, product reviews, some of the expensive ones just the last, and I think I remember those kind of claims. But I think it's similar to antenna claims, you know, the DBs and all that with why QSC stays away from things like that. I think it comes under that category, Dick. Better off talking to somebody that's used this thing at a beach, you know, the expensive ones. I mean, they have nice ones. But even the less expensive ones, I thought were pretty good. And they have earphones. You put the earphones on, you're going to pick it up a lot easier with the earphones on than just listening to the box itself. Question about it.
I think that's a very good point. When you're listening for a weak signal in the noise, a ham radio signal, for instance, on Morse code, wearing earphones can make a huge improvement compared to normal use of a loudspeaker where you're getting various kinds of echoes in the room. Until you've actually done it, it's kind of hard to believe what those earphones, a good set of earphones, can do with a trained set of ears listening for a weak signal in the tone and the noise. So the guy with the earphones running up and down the beach looking for coins, quite possibly is going to have a hell of a lot more sensitivity. He's getting rid of the beach noises, and he's very carefully listening for that tone. Of all the beach combing you've done, I imagine you've occasionally run into some of these guys with an expensive unit and a bunch of digging tools and a basket that they carry for putting in all of their treasures that they found. Have you ever found a guy that looked like he was really well-equipped, Paul? Earphones, expensive unit, a basket, digging tools, and a big smile on his face because he's finding lots of stuff. Have you ever run into one of those, Paul? WS2N, K2LAW.
Let CW go by. And I haven't. Like I said, the ones I've had, when my daughter was young, I used it with her. So went to a couple of beaches, and, you know, mostly in the backyard and out in the front. And then they got older. The kids get older. And then they sit. So recently I have done it last year and early this spring. But haven't seen anybody else, you know. Got the Ronkonkoma Beach, the parks there. Kind of fun to find a nickel here and there. Grandkid gets happy about that. But I haven't really done that much of a dick, is it? We'll have to get a hold of somebody. I'll tell you, I've tracked the, we have underground service here, and there's cable that goes, the coax cable goes from the box of the house, and for the first 10 feet, I'd say it's about 4 or 5 inches below the ground. I could pick it up, no problem. but then it drops a little deeper, and then I lose it probably, I guess, around 6 inches. And then at one point it does start to come back up again, and, you know, they don't do too good at burying this thing. And, I can pick it up again. So if I put a couple of markers as I go, at a couple hundred feet to the house, I could tell you exactly what my coax cable is. Even so, I probably lose it after about maybe four inches or so. But when it comes back up, I'll pick it up. That's kind of fun to, you know, trace that. I've done that for good reasons, too.
Will you V2C?
WV2C, sounds like you've got a question. Stop your name, sir, and then your question. WV2C, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Good evening, Dick. I was just listening to the conversation. I've been metal detecting now for about 9 years, and while I'm far from an expert, it definitely does pay to get a good machine, because you can definitely find objects anywhere from, on the extreme range, anywhere from 8 inches to 2 feet down, depending on the type of soil and the object that the machine you're using. So regularly find quarters and nickels and dimes up to a foot down without any problem. I'm using a pulse induction machine. There are others out there. The one I'm using is non-discriminating, so you basically hear everything and you basically dig everything. So I have a lot of fun with it. It's really my summer hobby. I was just doing it last week, and I'll be out there again tomorrow. K2RW in the group, WV2C.
That's good information, Tony. Tony, what brand are you using? How many dollars is it? And what do you believe is its detection range? In other words, will it detect a nickel 4 inches below the ground? Give me some numbers on that, Tony, if possible. WV2C, K2LAW.
I'm using a white dual field PI, and that's a pulse induction coil machine. I found pieces of metal 2 feet down on the beach, quarter, nickel, dime, a foot down, foot and a half down without any problems. Retailed for around $800. On the other end, you would have a Mine Lab Excalibur. That would be equally as deep. Well, maybe not quite as deep, but it does do discrimination for you. You can pull ferrous and non-ferrous objects by listening to the tone, but it doesn't go as deep as a dual-field PI. And those are just two. That's around $1,200, $1,400. And there are many others, but Mine Lab and White's are probably the two best ones that I'm aware of.
Impressive. 2 feet down. Whoa. When you've got that extra range, my guess is what's going on here, part of what's going on with you, Tony, is